This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. Coming up, Sevilla Mann talks with Smithsonian American Art Museum curator Ariel O'Connor. She discusses the work of pioneering forensic scientist Francis Glessner Lee. Lee built miniature settings that helped law enforcement solve crimes. But first, Von Jonsson was the president and presiding judge of the trial chamber of the United Nations International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda until its closing in December of 2015. He was elected judge of the International Criminal Tribunal for Yugoslavia in 2011. I spoke with Judge Jonsson in September when he visited Western Michigan University to deliver the Political Science Department's George Klein Lecture.
Explain a little bit, because I think we hear about it sporadically, how the international court system actually works. How do people get brought to justice, and how do the deliberations go?
Yeah, actually, we have a long range of international criminal courts now. It sort of started with the International Criminal Tribunals for Nuremberg and Tokyo, and then after the creation of the United Nations, the United Nations Security Council decided to set up a court for the former Yugoslavia to adjudicate the very serious violations of international humanitarian law in connection with the splitting up of the federal state of Yugoslavia. And the following year, the Security Council likewise set up a similar tribunal for Rwanda to deal with the genocide that happened in 1994. Each tribunal has its own prosecution, and like also in national systems, it's the prosecution that decides who to indict. And because we are international courts and the running costs are very, very high, we only deal with the most responsible for the crimes that have been committed. So the policy of the prosecution has been to sort of select those who have been the most predominant in the atrocities that happened, and also take from different sectors, the political side, the military side, business people and others who have been involved.
And is that why, I mean, I suppose when we read about these, it's usually a relatively small number of people. And is that because it is very focused on trying to find who was truly, I guess we'd say, at the center of war crimes or genocide?
Yeah, I mean, the international courts can never replace the domestic courts. We are far too expensive to run. So we try to take the upper echelon, which will also serve as a signal to the whole society that are involved. The ICTY indicted about 160 people and tried eventually 111.
ICTY, what's
that? That's the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. And the Rwanda Tribunal, ICTR, tried about 68. We are a somewhat smaller operation than the Yugoslav Tribunal.
As a judge, when you're sitting there weighing all of what might have happened in terms of war crimes being committed, in terms of, in the case of Rwanda, full-blown genocide, and you're presiding over that, and you're trying to figure out what is a just sentence. I suppose some people could hear that, and you could say you could never really make it severe enough. But do you have to have some sort of judicial balance or judicial restraint that weighs those factors and tries to make sure it's a fair trial? And while it's a just sentence, it's also a sentence that falls within some sort of boundaries.
Yeah, well, with a sentence, we can't go any higher than a life sentence. We can't apply the death penalty, which would be against UN standards, which sort of created also a problem in relation to the concerned country Rwanda, because they had death penalty in Rwanda. So those they were trying were often sentenced to the death penalty, whereas the more responsible we were dealing with could not get more than a life sentence.
And just to understand here, is there a way that Rwanda can say, well, look, we have the death penalty, so we would rather try these people in our courts, or does it have to go to the international court?
Well, we have concurrent jurisdiction. It means that both we and Rwanda have jurisdiction to try these people, but the UN resolution setting up the court gives us primacy. And especially in the beginning, there was some competition between Rwanda and the Rwanda tribunal of who would try whom. But in most cases, we got the final say there, and they were transferred to the Rwanda tribunal, the international tribunal for trial.
How important is it that there was an international court and that it did pass judgment on genocide? Because in the case of Rwanda, that was really the first time in history that happened, right?
Yeah, it was the first time since the Holocaust. And at the time of the Holocaust, there was no genocide convention. So the convictions there was for crimes against humanity. So the ICTR, the Rwanda Tribunal, was the first tribunal anywhere to convict for genocide. But the following year, the genocide in Rwanda was in 1994, but the following year there was a genocide in Srebrenica, in the former Yugoslavia. So it sort of came one after the another, one after the other. And of course it sort of brought genocide on the world map, because before it was more or less a principle, and nobody expected it to happen again, but it did, and now we see now recently it has happened also with the Rohingyas. So it is very, very essential to try this as an international level to deter states from resorting to genocide. And the UN also set up an agency to advise the Secretary General on preventive measures to avoid recurrence of genocide.
Yeah, do you think that there is something to be said for passing a ruling by an international court, handing down a sentence that does send a message, and can that message get through, that if there is genocide, that it will be met with justice and that those who commit it will find themselves in prison for life?
Well, it of course depends on the jurisdiction of the international courts. The Yugoslav Tribunal and the Rwanda Tribunal, they can't take in new cases. Now we have the International Criminal Court, but as a starting point, the International Criminal Court can only try criminal acts that happened on the territory of state parties, plus cases referred from the United Nations Security Council. And when it comes to the cases referred to the United Nations Security Council, there are five permanent members there that have a veto. And it means that parts of the world that is under sort of China's protection, like North Vietnam, there will likely be a veto against any intervention from the ICC against North Korea. Similar somewhere, you have a special interest, America, and will oppose that. It has caused some frustration in Africa, but because it seems that there are none of the permanent members that have sufficient special interest in Africa to oppose prosecutions against African states. So the leaders in Africa, not the civil society, but the leaders in Africa feel that they're sort of being discriminated. They can't commit serious violations of humanitarian law without being prosecuted, whereas it's possible other places in the world.
This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. You're listening to an interview with Judge Von Jonsson. He was the president and presiding judge of the trial chamber of the United Nations International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, and also judge of the International Criminal Tribunal for Yugoslavia. I spoke with Judge Jonsson in September while he was at Western Michigan University to speak on war crimes, the international courts, and reconciliation.
You are here at Western Michigan University to deliver an address called The International Criminal Courts and Their Contribution to Peace and Reconciliation in Yugoslavia. Is there some sort of a reconciliation, to use that word from the title of your address, that does happen when there is some sort of finding by an international criminal court, and when the trial is held and when it is perceived as being fair? Does that help this nation, where an awful thing has happened, move on and try to rebuild?
Well, it's the belief of the Security Council that judicial proceedings holding people accountable would not that it would create peace and stability, but that it would contribute to peace and stability, because of course there are other factors that come into play as to whether there will be a stable situation. But I believe that just as in domestic proceedings, we conduct criminal proceedings, criminal prosecution for a cause, it brings closure and some kind of I won't call it satisfaction, but at least that you as a victim is or relative to a victim is being taken seriously and the state is on your side, and it's supposed to help them getting on with their life instead of being focused on getting revenge or retaliation. And similarly, in relations between states, I mean, if the population in one country is very hostile to the other country, then of course it will also affect the political situation between the countries. But as we saw with the Yugoslav, the dissolution of Yugoslavia, the hostilities actually continued and intensified after the tribunal was created. The worst atrocities happened in 1995 in Bosnia, and that was 2 years after the creation of the tribunal. Whereas in Rwanda, after the exiled Tutsi's army had taken control of the country, there was no more warfare inside the country. And is that attributable to the intervention of the criminal court, or is it because the new regime had a very firm grip on power in the country? It's a question that anybody can have an opinion of.
Is the international court system likely always going to be coming in after the fact, as opposed to coming in and, say, bringing a current leader in to face trial? Is it likely to happen after that person has been removed from power, either voluntarily or otherwise?
Well, in Rwanda, we tried the former prime minister, who was prime minister during the genocide, the ICTY, the Yugoslav tribunal. They tried Milosevic, who was president of Serbia.
But after having stepped down, correct?
Well, just about the time where he was supposed to step down, they issued the indictment. Then those who took over was not totally disinterested in handing him over to the international tribunal. But likewise with the ICC, they have not been able to arrest the president of President al-Bashir of Sudan for I don't know how many years. So it is difficult to get to a political leader who is still in power. The same with Charles Taylor from Liberia. They couldn't get to him until he was out of power. So it has been discussed whether to wait with indicting the leaders until they have actually getting out of power or close to it. Because it creates a lot of of animosity that doesn't really lead to anything as long as they are in power. On the other hand, it's difficult to try people at lower levels if you don't go to the top. So it's a dilemma.
Judge Von Jonsson, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Von Jonsson was the president and presiding judge of the trial chamber of the United Nations International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda until its closing in December of 2015. He was elected judge of the International Criminal Tribunal for Yugoslavia in 2011. I spoke with Judge Jonsson in September while he was at Western Michigan University to deliver an address for WMU's Political Science Department.